Hare Krishna. This part of my glorious master is entitled New York City, 1968. Beginning the journey from Buffalo to Disciple. Jim Curtin and I hitchhiked down from Buffalo, New York to New York City. Our purpose was clear. We wanted to see Swamiji, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, the founder Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We were both students at the State University of New York at Buffalo and had both begun chanting at a free university course given in mid-January of 1968. Now we had become interested enough to thumb our way to New York City. Swamiji had just returned from India, where he had gone to recover from a heart problem. He landed first in San Francisco and then traveled on to New York. He had only been there for a few days when Rupanuga, our teacher at the Free University course, suggested we travel to New York to meet him. The early March weather was cold, and snow had blanketed the fertile upstate farmland. We left on a Friday morning, covered most of the 250 miles to New York by late afternoon. Our final ride dropped us at the upper tip of Manhattan, so we jumped aboard a subway, headed downtown, and jumped off in Greenwich Village, the West Village. We knew that Swamiji's Friday night kirtan in class began at 7 p.m., and as we were already late, we ran cross town to the East Village and arrived at, quote, Matchless Gifts, end quote, 26 Second Avenue. Kirtan had already ended by the time we arrived, and Swamiji was speaking from the raised platform the New York devotees had built for him. I stepped into the storefront, sat down, and stared. It was the first time I was seeing my spiritual master. Comment. Several months before making this trip to New York City, I went to visit my parents in Rockaway, New York. A letter arrived from a university friend named Eric, who told me he had enrolled me in the Bhakti Yoga meditation course that started in January 1968. I became quite happy while reading his letter, for I considered myself a seeker of truth. A few days later, on television, I watched a bearded devotee, either a Rama or Hayagriva, on television describe how he had met Prabhupada. He said he was walking down Second Avenue one day and he had met the Swami. I thought, things like that never happened to me. But my own time was approaching. Later, I found out that this was actually Hayagriva, because that's how Hayagriva Prabhu had described his meeting with Prabhupada. Then again, a few days later, while visiting a friend, I watched Les Crane interview Swamiji in San Francisco. He was a popular TV interviewer personality that could be quite difficult and confronting with the people he was interviewing. The devotees chanted Hare Krishna, this was on his show, with arms raised in the air. Then Les Crane asked Swamiji if he was liberated. Swamiji replied, yes. He then waved his hand towards his eight Ashbury band of disciples who sat on a carpet at his feet and added, and all my disciples are also liberated. Les Crane's final question to Swamiji was about his age. Prabhupada smiled widely and said, 70, and I still have all my teeth. And that was so amazing to watch Prabhupada do that, because his smile was so huge when he said that. And it was so sort of simple and childish. And it was completely disarming for Les Crane. After I returned to Buffalo, I found myself chanting Hare Krishna in a meeting room in Norton Hall, the student union. It wasn't the first time I had chanted Hare Krishna, but this was different. Different from the 1967, quote, bein in a park in Buffalo, where I had drummed on a guitar case and sung the mantra. The incense and candles burning on the altar, the Persian carpet, and the 40 university students sitting in various postures on the floor added an Eastern flavor. But the real difference was Rupanuga, an initiated disciple of Swamiji, who is bringing Krishna consciousness to our university. After Rupanuga led us in the chanting, he began his lecture. I agreed with his philosophical thrust that material gain cannot satisfy us, and I decided to take up chanting Hare Krishna as he advised, 15 minutes twice every day, morning and evening. Before leaving that class, I reflected, I wanted meditation, and I got a religion instead. Just my luck. Somehow I knew that this was going to be not a whimsical take it up, drop it, take it up, drop it type of a thing, but rather it was going to be my life. Despite my luck, by the next class, I thought of myself as a devotee. The Hare Krishna Mahamantra had incredible potency, and it prompted me to compare all my previous attempts at self-realization to a dog's chasing his tail. A voice prompted me from within, "You've never completed anything. Keep chanting Hare Krishna and complete this." As the weeks passed, I bought beads and switched over to a diet of prasad. Rupanuga told me, "Whatever you like to do, you can do in Krishna consciousness." I replied, "What about listening to records?" Rupanuga, "You can listen to Krishna conscious records," he said. Interested, I inquired how many Krishna conscious albums were out. His confident reply was, "One." One, I thought. I have 150 albums that I play one after another. I nevertheless purchased the one album and played it continuously. It was the happening record. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. That was the very famous, of course, our Prabhupada singing and playing the drum in the recording studio. In the privacy of my attic apartment, I flipped the album again and again. Amazingly, this one album satisfied me. Gradually, I began to decipher Swamiji's Indian accent. On the cover of the record album, quote, "And there is no need to understand the language of the mantra. Even a child can take part and dance in ecstasy." By the time I had arrived at 26 Second Avenue that March and was face to face with Swamiji, I fully understood his accent. I already knew him. I already know him, was my initial reaction to his presence. Seeing him was like meeting someone familiar, like a grandfather. Okay, Hare Krishna. Thank you. Hare Krishna.